BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Friends, we thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here today on BCY America. Looking at a story recently from the Gateway Pundit, they ran it on May 21st at a globalist group that had a scenario of a monkeypox outbreak or attack on May 15th, 2022. Here's the story. Back in November of 2021, the NTI, that's the Nuclear Threat Initiative, they're a nonprofit, nonpartisan global security organization focused on reducing nuclear and biological threats imperiling humanity. Well, they partnered with the Munich Security Conference to conduct a tabletop exercise on reducing high-consequence biological threats. What's interesting, though, ladies and gentlemen, on page 10 of their report, last November, they discussed a possible monkeypox outbreak on May 15th of 2022 in the fictional country of Brinia. Now, interesting enough, the first case of monkeypox was reported, I think, around May 7th, but by May 22nd, it was reported 14 countries confirming outbreaks of monkeypox and doctors warning of a significant rise in UK cases. Now, it wasn't the fictional country of Brinia, but rather Belgium, that began the first country to introduce this compulsory monkeypox quarantine. You know, anyone testing positive must isolate for 21 days. And by May 26, at least 200 confirmed cases, over 100 suspected cases of monkeypox detected in Europe, Australia, and the U.S. Also reported on May 20th that at this time, the Biden administration, as of that date, had ordered 13 million additional doses of the monkeypox vaccine. The president warning that monkeypox is something everybody should be concerned about. So what's happening? What's going on? What's happening behind the scenes? Well, helping us to make sense of what's going on today, we welcome back Barbara Lowe Fisher, president of the National Vaccine Information Center. They're a nonprofit charity co-founded with Parents of DPT Vaccine Injured Children in 1982. NVIC is a national grassroots movement and public information campaign to institute vaccine safety reforms and informed consent protections in the public health system. She has researched, has analyzed, has publicly articulated the major issues involving the science, the policy, the law, the ethics, and politics of vaccination to become one of the world's leading non-medical consumer advocacy experts on the subject. Barbara, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure. It's been really interesting in May, last month in May 2022. And the tabletop exercise that you talked about that was sponsored by the Nuclear Threat Initiative in Munich, Germany, about a year ago, you know, was attended by world leaders and public health officials and pharmaceutical companies. And their goal was to discuss how to improve the global response to pandemics like COVID and preserve what they call, quote, biosecurity. And they did use the monkeypox virus as outbreak, a fictional monkeypox virus outbreak as the example. And it was that tabletop exercise was very reminiscent of the tabletop pandemic planning exercise that was conducted in the fall of 2019 in the U.S. at Johns Hopkins University, hosted by the World Economic Forum and the Gates Foundation. And that used the coronavirus, a new coronavirus strain, as an example. And, of course, as we all know, just 2 months later, a coronavirus outbreak was announced by the World Health Organization in early 2020. And so it's a lot of people online are pointing out, is it just a coincidence?
Yeah, I mean, doesn't that seem weird to you, Barbara? I mean, it is weird.
Well, you know, I think that one of the reasons, of course, that people are talking is that there are rumors that the monkeypox has been genetically altered in biohazard labs in China and other parts of the world. Health officials deny that this was being done, and they point to the genetic sequences of the current monkeypox strain that link it to past outbreaks. But here's the thing. We all know about the controversy over the origin of SARS-CoV-2, that it was potentially genetically engineered in a biohazard lab in Wuhan, China. And so you can see how people are talking about this as more people become educated about this issue. I was looking at today, they say there's been about 600 cases of monkeypox reported in 30 countries. Some 18 of those cases are in the U.S. This is an orthopox virus, like the variola or smallpox virus and the cowpox virus. And it causes open lesions and blisters on the skin. It can be transmitted through close personal contact with open lesions or body fluids. Now, the symptoms of monkeypox are milder than smallpox. You know, we're talking fever, headache, fatigue, body ache, swollen lymph nodes, shortness of breath. Then you have a rash that it can appear all over the body and turns into blisters that are filled with pus that clear up in about 4 weeks. It can be mistaken for chickenpox or shingles or other diseases that cause lesions on the skin. They say that the fatality rate with this strain of monkeypox has been about 1 in 100, but there have been no reported deaths in the latest outbreak. Now, what is strange is monkeypox has mostly been confined to certain regions of Africa. And this recent outbreak has happened simultaneously in these 30 countries, primarily in the European Union. Now, the WHO and CDC, they say most of the cases appear to be related to sexual activity among men at raves and clubs and festivals in Europe. In fact, today the World Health Organization warned that people in the affected areas should limit their number of sexual partners and get medical care if they have lesions and quarantine. So right now, this monkeypox outbreak is being confined to those who have been at these raves and these festivals and have presumably infected other people. The UK, I think, has about 190 cases. It is very odd that somehow simultaneously you have monkeypox outbreak in all of these different places, non-Africa places.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, certainly people are asking questions, and they should ask questions. Now, scientists have been reporting for about 2 decades. If you go into the medical literature, you can see they're reporting that monkeypox is potentially going to be a problem. Why? It's an orthopox virus, a relative of smallpox virus, and they say because we stopped vaccinating people with smallpox vaccine in the 1970s, before the smallpox was supposedly eradicated in 1980, that the monkeypox virus has had an opportunity to get a foothold among animals and humans. So they have been talking about this for a while. But the last case of monkeypox in this country was in 2003. Somebody got infected from prairie dogs. There were some humans that got infected from infected prairie dogs that came from overseas, I think. So, you know, this is just all everybody scratching their head as to why we've all of a sudden got this monkeypox outbreak. Now, what is the response of the government to this? Well, we've got two biotech companies, Abbott and Roche, that have already announced plans to roll out monkeypox PCR kits for testing in the U.S. And we've got national smallpox vaccine stockpiles in place. We have 100 million doses of the ACAM 2000 vaccine manufactured by Emergent BioSolutions, which also manufactures the BioThrax anthrax vaccine that's in the national stockpile. And then we have a new vaccine. We have about 13 million doses, as you said, of the Jynneos vaccine that is produced by Bavarian Nordic. And it is supposed to be for both smallpox and monkeypox. And that's 13 million doses of freeze-dried doses of the Jynneos vaccine. There is a difference between the two vaccines. The ACAM is they're both live virus vaccinia vaccines, but the ACAM is more like the original smallpox vaccine. So you can get progressive vaccinia and eczema vaccinatum that looks a lot like smallpox. You can get inflammation of the heart in about 1 in 200 persons vaccinated. It leaves a pox-like scar on the skin when the vaccine is administered. The Jynneos vaccine is called a replication-deficient vaccine, and it's produced by the genetically modified Vaccinia Ancora virus. It uses a vector. It does not cause progressive vaccinia or eczema vaccinatum. It does not leave a scar on the skin. But here's the thing. We don't really know, because this is a very new vaccine, Jynneos, we don't really know how truly reactive it is or how truly effective it is. There's no smallpox and very little monkeypox to really measure the efficacy of it. So, you know, are they going to move to eventually make everyone or recommend that everybody take a smallpox vaccine because they don't like it. That you know, only about 30% of the world, older people like me, I had smallpox vaccine. Older people still have an experience with the virus, with the vaccinia virus vaccine. Do they want everyone to take it? That's the big question. Right now they're saying just researchers who do work on these orthopox viruses, including smallpox virus, by the way, are supposed to take the vaccine, and potentially healthcare workers who may come in contact with an infected person.
You know, Barbara, you mentioned the lab issue, and you know, whether it's coincidences or not, I saw a story in the New American. I mean, they told of a study published in February of this year, 2022, authored by 9 Wuhan Institute of Virology researchers, published in the lab's Quarterly Scientific Journal, that researchers appeared to identify a portion of the monkeypox genome that enabled the PCR test to identify the virus. I mean, this is months before this all broke.
Well, see, they've been doing this type of research, genetically engineering very lethal viruses for decades in these biohazard labs, not just in China, but in the U.S. and all over the world. And again, you have scientists with very little oversight who are taking very lethal pathogens and are genetically manipulating them.
Gain of function.
Gain of function research, but also just generally, you know, and how secure are these biohazard labs? Well, there's a lot of questions about how secure they are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's because scientists and these medical researchers literally have no oversight. Nobody is looking at what they're doing. They're just giving them a free hand. And our government and other governments are funding these labs and funding these researchers. But, you know, who's going to pay the price if there is a escape of these pathogens from these labs? We're going to pay the price.
Yeah. Well, I understand at the same time the smallpox vaccine manufacturers, well, they're seeing some significant stock price increases.
Oh, you know, absolutely. You've got Moderna, that is a manufacturer of the COVID vaccine, has already announced that they're going to be potentially creating a new smallpox, monkeypox vaccine. You've got Bavarian Nordic, which also already has sold vaccine for the national stockpile in the U.S., and you have Emergent BioSolutions, which owns the ACAM vaccine, which basically is still licensed and potentially can be, you know, given to people. So there's a big question mark as to how this is going to end. Because as we remember with COVID, with the SARS-CoV-2 virus, in early 2020, the World Health Organization and the CDC were saying not to worry. This is an outbreak, you know, in China. And then it turned into this big deal, where people were locked down and forced to mask and couldn't come out of their houses. I mean, in some countries, you literally could not leave your house.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know where it will end. Hopefully, the plan is not to have everybody take a smallpox vaccine.
Wow.
But I don't know.
Well, friends, we're going to take a quick break here. Barbara Lowe Fisher with us from the National Vaccine Information Center. After the break, we're going to bring the World Health Organization into our discussion here today. We'll also be talking about the COVID shot, so don't go away. Stay tuned. This is Crosstalk coming your way on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, did Noah's Ark have to contain 2 of every species we find on planet Earth today?
Not at all, Chris. In fact, this is a straw man argument used by those who really don't believe in Noah's Ark at all. The Bible says that God created each basic type of animal after its kind, and that Noah was to bring 2 of each kind of animal on board the ark. Kind would be represented by the basic categories of animals today, such as the dog kind. Within the dog kind, there are several species. That's the wolves and the foxes and the coyotes and the dingoes. They are called species, but they're all interfertile. They're all part of the dog kind. There was plenty of room on board the ark for 2 of each of these various kinds of land-dwelling, air-breathing animals. The Bible story holds water, as it were. We read about it when we go back to Genesis.
For more on creation, visit our website at www.icr.org.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher with us here today, president of the National Vaccine Information Center, and their website, nvic.org, staying abreast on so many different issues. And friends, it's not only COVID. I mean, it goes back. I mean, Barbara, you discuss HPV, you discuss the DPT and the vaccines throughout history here as all part of your website. It's really a go-to place to get the information that people need to know to make intelligent choices.
That's right. It's about making informed choices, not telling people what to do, but, you know, understanding the risks and complications of diseases and vaccines and being able to legally make an informed choice. That's the big deal today, is are we going to have the right to make an informed choice? But, yeah, when I first started this work back in 1982, there were only 7 vaccines that were recommended for children. We're now up to 17, I think, vaccines recommended for children. So it's a very different world. And, you know, I think that one of the issues is this growing power of the United Nations,
yes,
specifically the World Health Organization, also known as the WHO, the World Health Organization, headquartered in the United Nations. And they're the ones that declared the coronavirus pandemic 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the UN, a lot of people don't realize, it was created after World War II as a peacekeeping body representing all the countries of the world. And the World Health Organization was created within the UN to help improve public health in different countries. Well, today the WHO has become a powerful quasi-governmental body that is funded by nation members, including the U.S., one of the biggest funders, but also by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, and the world's largest pharmaceutical companies. Really, WHO has been captured by industry. And all you have to do is look at Pfizer raking in $36 billion from its COVID-19 vaccine in 2021 alone, making it the most profitable pharmaceutical product in a single year in the history of the pharmaceutical industry. That is an astonishing amount of money. It all goes back to this declaration of this coronavirus pandemic by the WHO. So here's, you know, you mentioned at the outset about the WHO and their, what we have right now is this pandemic treaty that the WHO is talking about, which is basically going to reform or amend the international health regulations of the United Nations. And unfortunately, this administration is proposing amendments to this treaty that would strengthen the World Health Organization's authority to declare public health emergencies and override the public health policies of the U.S. and other nations.
You know, it is outrageous. And ladies and gentlemen, just a heads up, to Lord willing, tomorrow on the program, Matt Staver will be joining us, a constitutional attorney who also has been following the World Health Organization and all these treaties. And they have several more events lined up in this year of 2022. We'll be breaking that down. But Barbara, as we saw last week, I mean, a real scare as to even the sovereignty of the United States, giving power and control of the World Health Organization over our everyday life here in the United States. I mean, that's what the Biden administration was proposing here. And this is a massive group that is accumulating massive powers on what they deem to be health emergencies.
Yes. I mean, Matt Staver at Liberty Counsel was among the first to blow the whistle on what the WHO is trying to do. And he has definitely said these amendments cede U.S. sovereignty to WHO. And a couple of days ago, a former WHO official, Dr. David Bell, came out and confirmed, he worked there for many years, confirmed that proposed amendments to the UN's international health regulations would give the power to a small group of unelected officials in the WHO who are influenced by the pharmaceutical industry and politics to effectively take away the sovereignty of countries. And he said that this pandemic treaty will make lockdowns a permanent part of global pandemic responses. And you know, what it would do is invalidate U.S. state public health laws, including vaccine exemptions, that's what we have been concentrating on at NVIC since 2010, is trying to protect the integrity of public health laws at the state level, specifically vaccine exemptions. And trying to say we shouldn't, we actually, the people in this country stopped the COVID vaccine mandates at the state level. There was not one state last year that passed a COVID vaccine mandate. Why? Because public health laws in this country are basically primarily state laws. If you have the WHO overriding countries' public health policies, then that's going to also invalidate the state public health policies. So I'm very concerned. You know, I read a fact-checking outlet. You know, these fact-checkers that are basically propaganda machines for the legacy media. They said that the WHO is not planning to run roughshod over national sovereignty. And they said that all that that these proposed amendments do is add more, quote, naming and shaming techniques to the WHO's arsenal.
My.
Okay, naming and shaming, which is basically censorship. This is what's also going to be very dangerous about this type of treaty, is WHO basically saying you can't criticize the policy, which is what we've seen. I mean, NVIC has been thrown off of all four social media platforms in 2021 because we did not go along with the government narrative. We challenged the government's narrative on COVID vaccine and mandatory COVID vaccine policies. And so, you know, this is a very dangerous situation, and it is a power grab by the United Nations. It's unconstitutional.
Yeah.
You can't have an unelected international body dictating public health policy in the U.S. And so, you know, and then you look at the WHO, Tedros Ghebreyesus, said that the WHO was working on, quote, sketching out a new world order to handle future health crises.
Mm-hmm.
He said we, quote, need laws and rules that bring obligations to countries and, quote, a binding pact among countries to manage future pandemics. This is a runaway train. This cannot stand in the United States. And what we're urging people to do is, you know, if you don't like what this what they're trying to do, you need to just contact your elected representatives, particularly the federal level, and say, you know, we don't want this.
Yeah.
We don't want the World Health Organization to dictate public health policy in America.
And, friends, it is going to come back up. Though they failed many of these amendments and they got withdrawn last week, it is there are going to be further attempts, and there's many opportunities. Or you just revise a couple words and give it a, you know, put a new glossy finish on it to make it look like it, but it's the same poison in a new wrapper. And certainly it is something to keep your eyes on. And again, on the WHO topic, we're going to delve into that further tomorrow here on the program, so stay tuned for it. Barbara, I want us to also tie in this the COVID shot, and because though the emphasis is not there so much, and I understand they've had to destroy millions of doses for lack of use, but there is much that's going on, including approval for this shot for babies at 6 months through 5 years of age.
That's right. And by the way, before we get to code, just ask Matt Staver about the electronic digital global vaccine passports, because WHO wants to have more authority to adopt digital global vaccine passports to track everyone's vaccination status. And we already know that there's an attempt in this country to do it, both with corporations as well as the government, and it's very dangerous. NVIC has been opposed to these digital tracking systems for several decades. But you're right, a lot going on with COVID vaccine for children. In 2 weeks, on June 14 and 15, Moderna will apply to the FDA for an emergency use authorization to give Spikevax, its mRNA COVID vaccine, in two 25-milligram doses for infants and children under age 6 and as young as 6 months. And Pfizer will apply for an EUA to give Comirnaty, its mRNA COVID vaccine, in three-milligram doses for infants under age 5 and as young as 6 months old. So, you know, they had to reduce these doses, the amount, microgram doses, because of the reactivity of the vaccine that they've been seeing in some of the older children. I said milligram, I meant microgram. Now, when you look at the clinical trials, you see that none of the children in the trials had ever been diagnosed with COVID. This is very interesting, since the CDC has said the majority of children in the U.S. have already been infected with the SARS-CoV-2 virus. In fact, CDC has said about 60% of Americans, including two of every three children between 1 and 4 years old, have been infected with SARS-CoV-2. The majority of children who get COVID show only mild symptoms or no symptoms at all. And most of the children have gotten Omicron, the Omicron variant. So, you know, here we are bringing out a vaccine for these little babies and for these children when most of them have already had experience with the virus. For most healthy children, COVID has been a very mild disease. Only 1% of child cases have been hospitalized. About 0.02% have died.
Hmm.
This is a very, very low complication and mortality rate among children. And yet, you know, there is going to be a big push to get every child as young as 6 months old this COVID vaccine.
Wow, wow. And, you know, as we look at this, we continue to see the stories of young people all of a sudden dying in their sleep or having blood clots, the myocarditis, and it advances too. I mean, we see the stories of pilots who received the mandatory COVID shot who are experiencing cardiac arrest, athletes that are collapsing from heart attacks. Just yesterday, the story of a 26-year-old graduate from Coventry University dying from a blood clot on his brain after receiving the AstraZeneca vaccine. I mean, the adverse effects and those that are being impacted are in a age group or class of individuals that were not at risk for COVID as far as the deadly effects of COVID.
Right. I mean, the CDC says that within 7 days of vaccination, over 90% of study participants in the Pfizer trial aged 12 to 15 years old reported at least one local or systemic reaction. In the participants 5 to 11 years old, about 86% reported at least one local reaction. 66% reported at least one systemic reaction, like fever, chills, fatigue, headache, new or worsened muscle pain, or swollen lymph nodes. This is a very reactive vaccine, very reactive. And there have been cases of brain inflammation, heart inflammation, strokes, Guillain-Barré syndrome. It's not an innocuous vaccine. And if you go and look at the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, in which we link to on our website through MedAlerts, the MedAlerts is a website we sponsor. Since 1990, over 2 million Vaccine Adverse Event Reports have been filed with the Federal Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System for all vaccines. Almost 1.3 million of those events are associated with COVID-19 vaccinations,
wow,
including about 28,000 deaths. But here's what's really strange. Since April of this year, almost 10,000 COVID vaccine adverse events have suddenly been removed from the VAERS database.
Okay, tell you what, we got a break right here because I'm going to have you repeat that sentence after we get back. Adverse effects being removed from the COVID database, folks, this is astounding information. And I want Barbara to get this out, so stay with us. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, the National Vaccine Information Center's website, nvic.org. We'll be back in just a minute.
Islam is on the rise all over the West, including America. In his compelling book, The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, author Erwin Lutzer believes that we have reached a tipping point. The spread of Islam is impacting the way we live, and this advancement of Islam poses a threat to our freedoms of speech and religion. But he says this time also offers Christians a powerful opportunity to share the gospel. In The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, Dr. Lutzer addresses several important issues, including the agenda that Islamists have for the West, how Islam's growing influence will affect you personally, and what the church should be doing in response. He also gives a reminder that ultimately, the enduring truth of the cross will prevail. Copies of the book, The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, are available for a donation of $17 to VCY America by calling 1-800-729-9829 during regular office hours. Again, that number, toll-free, is 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest today from the National Vaccine Information Center. Yeah, we're talking about monkeypox. We're talking about the World Health Organization, talking about COVID and the shot information. And Barbara, you said something rather astounding here as it relates to adverse effects being removed. Could you repeat that so we can hear loud and clear what it is you're telling us?
Right. Well, we monitor the VAERS system, and we monitor the reports, the adverse event reports that are coming into that federal vaccine adverse event reporting system that's online. And since April of this year, almost 10,000 COVID vaccine adverse events that were in the database have been removed from the VAERS database with no explanation from the government officials as to why those cases have been removed. I wish that the CDC and FDA would explain to people why they are removing those events. It's a big question mark. It doesn't look good.
So are they reducing numbers at the same time then as well?
Well, if you have the cases removed, then they aren't counted in the total numbers of reports that have been filed.
Right.
So it's just a puzzlement. We don't understand why. There may be a perfectly good explanation, but I think that the government owes people an explanation.
Indeed. There is another Pfizer drug that's out that there's been a lot of attention drawn lately to, Paxlovid. Do you know anything about this drug?
Well, you know, it's something that was given an emergency use authorization by the FDA, and people over 12 years of age can take it. In fact, it's given by the government for free to all COVID-positive people, and it's supposed to help reduce hospitalization, stay, or death. But what's happening, what's being reported, is that you take this, I think, over a course of 5 days, and you can have, however, when you complete the course, you can have a resurgence of COVID symptoms and a positive test about a week later. Some people have reported having symptoms that are less severe than the original bout with COVID, but some say it's the same or worse. So they call them rebound infections. So there's some questions being asked about the effectiveness of this drug that's being given to people. Still, it is recommended, definitely still recommended.
One other issue.
It's a Pfizer product.
Right, right. And we're going to open the phone lines here in just a moment, but I had a story handed to me just before coming in the studio here on the Epic Times. And the headline, it says, new behavioral vaccines raise unsettling questions. And they're talking about, with the rise of opioid addictions and meth and alcohol, that there'll be a vaccine to somehow shut down this narcotic before it takes root in the body or the brain?
Yeah, we've reported in our weekly journal newspaper, The Vaccine Reaction, we've reported before on these opioid vaccines, which have been in development for quite some time. I haven't seen the most recent story, but I know that there are all kinds of vaccines being created for addictions, for all kinds of chronic diseases, not infectious, but chronic diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes. I mean, you name it. You name an ailment, there's a vaccine being created for it.
Wow.
I can guarantee you.
Wow. Well, friends, let's open the phone lines because no doubt you've got a lot of questions or comments, brief comments, focus on questions if you can to probe Barbara with her today. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. And, Barbara, there are those that are talking about COVID. We're being warned of COVID outbreaks yet the president, I think, has talked about 100 million people being infected this fall sometime. That element of fear is constantly being put out before people, and many are questioning, are they actually going to try and subvert the elections like we have seen take place? I know some say that's just conspiracy talking, but we saw a lot of rule changes going into elections in the last go-around, and will that happen again?
Well, I think that what people need to really get their arms around is the fact that this vaccine does not prevent infection and transmission. It was designed to protect severe disease, a severe outcome with the COVID disease. That's a very different kind of vaccine mm-hmm. than has been used before, like measles vaccine and others that are supposed to give you sterilizing immunity. In fact, they've changed the definition of immunity, the CDC did, to move away from the fact that a vaccine, you know, prevents infection and transmission to just initiates an immune response in the body. So they're definitely trying to change the way people look at vaccines as a result of this COVID vaccine. But the truth is that most people have had experience at this point with this virus. Most people have been infected, whether they've shown symptoms or not. It's in our population. It's in every population. So the mutations or the strains that come around, you know, I don't know many doctors that are saying that we're going to have a terrible, terrible mutant that's going to kill everybody or cause widespread death and injury. In fact, it's the other way that this is going to become a disease like influenza that's going to be coming around every year. And certainly the Pfizer CEO and others have said this will be an annual vaccine. Because this virus is good. It's the coronavirus causes, you know, common cold mm-hmm. and other types of respiratory symptoms. This coronaviruses have been around a long time.
Let's go to the phone lines. They're packed. Muckwonago, Wisconsin. Dominique, you're on the air.
Hello. I was wondering, first of all, one question is, it true that CEO of Pfizer said, Borlo, a few days ago at the World Economic Forum that they are on target from their goals in 2019 to cut the world's population in half? By 2023, and second, immunologist and vaccinologist Dr. Geert Vandenbosch is still warning the world to stop mass vaccinating. And so I was wondering if, because he says that the virus has figured out complete transmissibility, is now working on making itself stronger. So do you think there's a possibility that they're covering their tracks with what is already coming from the adverse reactions of the COVID shots with the monkeypox?
The majority of people who had died from COVID have been over age 65. Now, people over age 65 are a drain in economies, in our economy, for example, on the Medicare rolls. They require more help, more services, because they're older.
Mm-hmm.
And most older people have one or more chronic diseases.
And you couple that with Bill Gates, who has been saying for years now that same thing. If we really do a good job at vaccinations, you know, we're going to have, what is it, healthier people. We're going to save lives and reduce the population.
I know. This was talked about years ago, that there was some kind of a connection between population reduction and the mass vaccination mm-hmm. System. I wasn't on board with it in the beginning. But you know, there's so many unanswered questions
yes.
now. And this whole idea, the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, the United Nations, this whole idea of a new world order, is certainly, looks like it's coming true.
Mm-hmm.
And the electronic tracking of people, the forcing of vaccination, the demonization of anybody who criticizes vaccine policy as being a threat to the public health and societies is very disturbing. And it's something that I think everyone needs to have their eyes wide open about, because the only way that we can stop a very small number of people who want to take control of our bodies and the bodies of our children is if we stand up and we pass laws in this country that prevent them from doing it. We're the third largest country in the world after China and India. We have 50 countries in our country. If you look at our land size and you look at our population, we have the ability to turn this around and stand up for the U.S. Constitution, for the Bill of Rights, for human rights. But it will only happen if all of us decide that we're not going to leave it to somebody else to
mm-hmm.
do.
Yeah. And friends, we've got to have leadership that's going to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. I mean, those individuals need to be there. Let's go to Mike in Coopersburg, Pennsylvania. You're on the air, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, Jim and Barbara. Really appreciate the work that both of you are doing. And, Jim, I've listened to you for many, many years, since like the 90s. And I just can't thank the Lord enough for discerning people who can really get to the meat and potatoes of things, and just to help some of us out there that don't have expertise in these things. Just wanted to run a question past both of you. Do we really have any more good vaccines, and what would those be? That would be my first question. The other one is, in Revelation 9:21, 18:23, the word pharmakeion appears in the original, and just kind of curious about that word. So whoever wants to address either of those questions, I appreciate it. And again, I thank you, Lord, for your ministry.
Thank you so much here for the call here today. And, yeah, pharmakeia often tied in with the word sorcery there. But, Barbara, a comment on the question here on good vaccines?
Well, here's the thing. We're all individuals, and we have different genetic influences, different epigenetic influences, different microbiomes. We live in different types of environments, are exposed to different kinds of environmental toxins. Every vaccine carries a risk that it can be greater for some people than other people. And that's why you cannot say that any given vaccine is safe for everyone or is effective for everyone, because we're not all the same. And this has been the reason that I have been so staunchly defending the right to autonomy and the right to informed consent to vaccination, or indeed use of any medical product or medical intervention. So, you know, what may be a good vaccine for somebody may not be a good vaccine for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use the example of tetanus vaccine, which has been around for a long time, to prevent lockjaw. You know, if you step on a rusty nail and you get a wound that is does not bleed, and you can get lockjaw. You can die from lockjaw. Somebody who lives on a farm has a greater risk of being getting that tetanus.
Tell you what, I'm going to have you pick up with that right after the break, so we can get the full thought out there. Barbara Lowe Fisher is our guest. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk here on VCY America.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. In November of 2021, a group known as NTI, Nuclear Threat Initiative, put out a report of a fake country that had an outbreak of monkeypox. And in the report, they said it would outbreak in May of 2022, May 15th, 2022, to be precise. Well, guess what? That's pretty much when we started hearing about monkeypox in the news overseas and now in America. They went on to describe the goal, the objective, give more power to the World Health Organization, which is China, which is also the biggest funder of WHO, reported to be Bill Gates. So do you want the UN, Bill Gates, and China running our healthcare system and telling us when there's an emergency and when we have to shut down our businesses and our churches and our schools and stay inside? If we don't fight this global tyranny, that's what's coming. They've already gained it, and now it's being rolled out. For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest today, NVIC.org, the website, and one that tracks legislation, NVICAdvocacy.org as well. Barbara, so the call had come in and say, what are there good vaccines that are out there? And you're just giving us an illustration here that everybody reacts differently. So you're for informed choice, but you were giving us an illustration of the tetanus vaccine.
Right. I mean, your risk of getting a disease is in direct proportion to your risk of exposure to disease. So if you're on a farm and you're running barefoot through a field with cow manure and you step on a rusty nail, and it doesn't bleed, and you get no oxygen in that wound, you can come down with tetanus, lockjaw, and you can die. But your risk of exposure to tetanus when you're living in an apartment building in New York or in another city is it's not the same exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And by the same token, we all don't react the same way to pharmaceutical products like vaccines. So what I always advise people to do is look at each of the vaccines. Go to NVIC.org. We've got information on all the diseases and vaccines, and make an individualized decision that's good for you and your family.
Barbara is next in Kansas. Barbara, you're on the air.
concern.
Sorry about Barbara. Let me have you start over, please.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Many farmers and concerned citizens in my area are concerned about the biolabs that exist at our American universities. I personally know of a Chinese PhD and his family who were brought over from China so that he could work in this biolab at this university, which is 16 miles from where I live. They're, it seems, throwing out intelligent, educated, medical theories that have been around for eons, and they're engaging in voodoo hoo. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. What about biolabs in one's community or nearby, Barbara?
You know, I think that there's been a lot written about the laxity of oversight on these biohazard labs and the ability for microbes to, particularly genetically engineered microbes, to escape out of these labs. I think there also has to be a question, you know, when we look at monkeypox, I mean, these orthopox viruses, these pox viruses like variola, vaccinia, monkeypox, are, you know, increasingly being used, as the CDC says, in a wide range of biomedical research, including research that use the orthopox viruses as vaccine vectors. And that's why they say medical researchers are supposed to get the smallpox vaccine and booster doses. Now, if labs that are, you know, doing this genetic engineering of these pox viruses and other types of bacteria and viruses are not being regulated the way they should, or if somebody goes rogue in one of those labs and decides that they're going to send these genetically engineered viruses or bacteria to other labs, you know, because they are, you know, they're not very nice people, you know, who want to have something bad happen. I mean, again, who's providing oversight on these scientists and researchers? I don't blame the caller for being concerned about research that goes on in these if she's living near a biohazard lab.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the call. Dulaine is calling from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Dulaine, you're on the air. Hello, Dulaine. Dulaine. Okay, let's go to Chris in Hancock, Michigan. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi. Mike, thank you for your program, by the way. I appreciate it. My question is, when this first started, you know, some states had lockdowns. I'm in one of them, which was ridiculous. But they rolled out this vaccine pretty quick. In the past, as I understand, people would volunteer if they saw no other way. And all of a sudden, there's a vaccine. So my question to Barbara is, why would that be? My personal opinion is they were all set to go. I think Bill Gates is evil. I'm tired of masks. I'm tired of the whole talk of this COVID virus. And like you said earlier, this has been around a long time. And fear can control people. And I just want to remind people, pray. Just pray.
Yeah.
And what can we do? People are dropping dead all over the place. And nobody's making the connection. That is very frustrating. I work in the media, and I deal with this daily, and it's real frustrating. So either or both address that, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chris, for the call here today. Barbara, I know right. that there's a lot of concern about the speed at which this the shot came out.
Yeah, Pfizer spent just 248 days testing their mRNA vaccine. Again, never before licensed technology. It injects synthetic messenger RNA encapsulated in lipid nanoparticles into the body to program the body's cells to make SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. In the words of the World Economic Forum, you become a vaccine production plant.
Hmm.
So this is the first human vaccine to include lipid nanoparticles. And there are outstanding questions about the biodistribution in the body, where they end up. And do they end up in the liver, spleen, lungs, kidneys, maybe cross the blood-brain barrier? There were warning signs before when they were trying to do mRNA vaccines in decades past that there were issues with local and systemic inflammation, hyperinflammatory immune responses causing chronic inflammation and autoimmunity in the body, causing blood clots in the body. So these vaccines were mRNA vaccines were rushed to market. They were sitting there ready. They hadn't been able to get them licensed in the past, but they were sitting there ready, you know, to very quickly become these mRNA COVID vaccines. And so here's what people need to understand. There are no licensed, officially licensed COVID vaccines for children under age 16. These, on June 14, 15, Moderna and Pfizer will again be applying for these children's child vaccines, COVID vaccines, to be under an emergency use authorization, not official licensing, which means that they don't go through the type of clinical trials and the process, like with animal testing, et cetera, that they would have gone through if it had been an official licensing. So I don't know why they're still allowed to get these emergency use authorizations.
Yeah, yeah. Well, friends, we've run out of time, and I know there's many more questions that you have, but you certainly can touch base with the website for our guest here today, the National Vaccine Information Center at nvic.org and nvicadvocacy.org. Barbara, we thank you for your research, your study, and sharing the information with our listeners here today.
Thank you.
Barbara Lowe Fisher here, and she is president of NVIC, and again, check it out, folks. And as the other caller said, don't live in fear. Remember, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.